can't see, I'm in the thunder. I be feeling like I'm chick. You switch up like KD, Draymond, don't give me a tick. Ain't get no rest, I wrapped it right off my chest. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to season two of the Fan Take. Same crew as usual. I'm Cam, and this is my boy Tweety over here. And this is where we'll talk about the court, we'll talk about the field, and we'll talk about the culture. What's going on, Tweety?
The court, the field, the culture. What's going on, man? It's been a rough week for some teams, some fan bases. not really NFL-wide, but NBA-wide. So we're just going to dive into it a little bit.
Talking about teams having good and bad weeks. First, we got to talk about the Eastern Conference Finals. First, a little update on that. You got the 3-seeded Knicks going against the 4-seeded Pacers. And the 4-seeded Pacers are now 3-1, having 3-1 lead over the Knicks as we're recording this right now on Thursday. They play tonight at 7 o'clock on TNT. Talking about this series so far, Tyrese Haliburton has been leading the way for the Indiana Pacers, averaging 24 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists. And Jalen Brunson has been playing his butt off, trying as much as he can do to keep the Knicks in it, with 33 points a game and around 5.5 assists. What do you think about this playoff series thus far?
Other than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, nobody's probably playing better than Jalen Brunson. And Carney Towns is playing a decent series, too. The Knicks just don't have enough. And I said that last podcast. The Knicks are not playing deep enough. They don't have enough players coming off the bench that's giving over 10 per production. They probably only got like 2 or 3 guys off the bench that can at least get them 5 points every game. So it's like the Knicks just really don't have enough right now. The Pacers, they're just playing safe basketball. They're moving the ball. They're shooting well. They're running in transition, like I said they was going to do last week in their finishing games. It hurt the Knicks in those first 2 games that the Pacers were so good at finishing games, and they end up dropping both of them. It looked like the Pacers were going to take the series tonight, but I honestly think the Knicks can shake back and at least take this 6 or 7. And they might lose, but I want to see the Knicks do a little more. You know, I want to have a little hope for them next year. But I just think the Knicks, in the offseason, they should work on at least getting 1 or 2 players out of the draft and come off the bench and get them 8 to 9 points.
Yeah, and you got a lot of same sentiments you said. Well, I mean, the Knicks just been looking completely outclassed by the Pacers. And I think one of the big things is the Pacers being able to play good late. Pacers have been very good, in the fourth quarter. And you look at the first 2 games, the Pacers beat the Knicks by 3 points, 138 to 135 in that classic overtime game. And they beat them by 5 in game 2, 114 to 109. So the Knicks have been able to keep the game close late. But, I mean, you know, you talk about fatigue from the entire season. Obviously, you know, one of the big things that people talk about, Coach Tibbs for the Knicks, is that he's always playing his guys, his top, you know, 6-guy rotation. He's always playing them, you know, so many different minutes. You hear that, you know, everywhere you turn to. And, you know, the last couple of games, he was trying to, you know, get some guys in like DeLon Wright and somebody else I can't think of right now, but he's been trying to get guys in, but it's just too late. Especially when we talk about, you know, confidence. A lot of things, you know, about playing the NBA at this level is about confidence and you know, coach having belief in you. But if you haven't been playing guys, you haven't been playing, you know, guy 8, 9, 10, 11 all season, then it's usually not 11, but, you know, 8, 9, 10 all season, you try to throw them into the fire in the middle of the playoffs, even Eastern Conference Finals, it's just not going to work. And, I mean, the Pacers, you saw Tyrese Haliburton in game 1 doing the Reggie Miller choking sign. I mean, it's very, very descriptive of how the series has been going thus far, as far as the Knicks not being able to execute in close games.
It's just the end of the game. That's all I'm saying. That's really bad right now. They just got to learn how to close games. Well, it's probably a little too late to learn how to close games. But it's just the bench, man. You know, when you start in the fourth quarter off with Carr and the Towns playing probably the whole third and the whole fourth, it's like he's not going to give that to that much. He's giving you 4 or 5 points in the fourth quarter. Jalen Brunson is gas in the fourth. He didn't get you 34 before the fourth quarter didn't even started. So it's like they just don't have enough firepower right now.
Yeah, so talking about Eastern Conference Finals, got to go to the western side of the bracket with a series that actually concluded last night. You got the number one seeded Thunder going against the number six seeded Minnesota Timberwolves. And obviously the number one seeded Thunder took that home in only five games, winning, having a gentleman sweep against the Timberwolves 4-1. Looking at some averages, the MVP, the newly crowned MVP of the NBA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA, averaged 34 points per game, 5 rebounds, and around 8 assists. And Anthony Edwards, he averaged 23 points, 7 rebounds, and around 4.5 assists per game. But looking at his stats, it really isn't indicative of the type of production he's had this series. What do you think about this series and Anthony Edwards in particular?
I have like a, I don't know how advanced we are with technology right now with our little setup or whatever, but I have a, like a locally viral clip of me saying that I didn't think the Timberwolves could win one game, and they won one game. So it's like, I kind of already knew what was going to happen. It's a shocker to a couple of people because, you know, people are Anthony Edwards worshippers for some odd reason when he's never averaged over, what, 27? So it's like,
what you mean, oh, bro, 27?
When has he averaged over 27?
It's 27 points. What do you mean? How many people average 27 points?
But he's worshipped as if he's like Giannis, Shai, Jokic. He next face of the league. How are you the face of the league? And there's 7 to 10 people averaging more points than
talk
you.
About the series.
So, man. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the series. I'm going to stop hating on Anthony Edwards right now. Timberwolves, they just had too many guys that I don't believe even should be on the playoff team. Mike Conley is what? 39, 38, something in that range. There, yeah. He's playing horrible, man. His stats are 6-3-3, 3-3-5, 8-2-2. Like, bro, you're the starting point guard. You can at least give me 10 assists. It's like some. I don't see how this series wasn't close at all, but I still don't see how it was close as it was with people like Mike Conley on the court. Rudy Gobert played horrible. Rudy Gobert, you played one of the worst series of your life. So you came out of 2 or 3 of those games with under 10 rebounds. That's, you just can't do that. I think you probably had 20 points one game, and that was the game y'all won. The other night, you didn't score over like 8. So it's like, you got too many spots on the court where people are just not playing good at all. McDaniels, you used to disappear on offensive, but you had like 2 or 3 games where you didn't even have 8 points. So I'm just like, the production on that team was just so horrible. Like, that series couldn't end in nothing but 5. You have too many people that are too inconsistent on that team, and I believe the Timberwolves should be making some serious roster changes. The Thunder, however, they shouldn't change their roster at all. I don't even think you should even use the draft picks, because that team is amazing right now. We're playing amazing right now. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander playing like the MVP. He proved that he deserves the award. He outplayed Andy Edwards in every single game except the game that they lost, and that was just a bad game for the whole team. Timberwolves just didn't have a chance, man. Chet Holmgren, great series to you. Jalen Williams, he had a great series. I believe he had one bad game up in there. Alex Caruso been playing the defense of the playoffs. If you was a defensive player of the playoffs, it would be Alex Caruso. So it's like, it's just everybody just supporting the right way.
Yeah, I share a lot of that. I think it's all about the defense. I mean, OKC defense has just been swarming in a way that, you know, the Timberwolves just couldn't keep up with. The type of defensive tenacity that the OKC Thunder have, I mean, first off, it's pretty historic as far as defensive numbers are concerned, but it was nothing compared to the type of defense that the Lakers and the Warriors played. So, yeah, I mean, it was just a complete buzzsaw against the Timberwolves, and obviously Anthony Edwards played pretty bad. We're going to have another segment later on talking more about that. But and then Rudy Gobert, I mean, you've seen series in the past where Rudy Gobert is just basically unplayable. I mean, you know, him being a reputation, the defensive player of the year, it works in series against like the Lakers, where the Lakers doesn't have any post play. It works against in series like against the Warriors, where the Warriors, their post play was lacking. All you have is, you know, Draymond Green, and you try and get Kaminga in the last minute, game 5, 6, and you know, how many games?
I think it went to
5 or 6. But yeah, I mean, they played Kaminga late, and it's just Rudy Gobert was just dominating until he got to this team. OKC Thunder, where against Hardenstein, against Chet Holmgren, it just you know, wasn't working for Rudy Gobert. You mentioned Mike Conley, he's getting older, but as we talked about in pre-production for this episode that, you know, I didn't think the Timberwolves as presently constructed really fit, you know, Mike Conley's offensive moveset and game style, play style, I should say, in the playoffs. And, yeah, I mean, five games, man.
Another person that wasn't eating as they was in the last series, but they still played a decent series with Julius Randle. That's probably why he flew under my radar.
Yeah.
He wasn't playing like he played against the Warriors, but he
I mean, Julius Randle played pretty bad because I remember in the first game. In the first game he was horrible. They didn't play
the first game and last night. Horrible.
Yeah, because I think Chris Finch, the coach, I don't think he played Julius Randle in the second half.
He didn't. Yeah, he went 1-for-7 in game 4, I want to say.
You know what I'm saying? So,
he had 2 bad games.
Yeah, Julius, and to be honest with you, I think until this point, I think Julius Randle kind of outplayed Ant-Man the whole playoffs. I think Julius Randle was the best player on Timberwolves in the first 2 series.
Against no big man? Yeah, he was balling against no big man. But if you got somebody down there, I was like, yeah, Randle might decline, but he declined severely in 2 of those games. So yeah, I thought it was 1, but I guess it was 2. So
okay. Yeah. But, I mean, talking about going into the defense now, of the OKC Thunder. This morning, I was watching ESPN. I think it was either Michael Wilbon or it was Wendy who accidentally called OKC OKD. And I was like, you may have said it accidentally, but I think that kind of describes this team a lot. I think they're OKD now. What'd you think about that?
The defense has been like that all series. I'm pretty sure it's number one in steals, blocks. I mean, it's just too many guys that love defense more than offense on their team. So it's like, it's so hard to score, especially for teams that aren't as big with the 3 bigs that OKC, 4 bigs that OKC play. Think about Kyrie Williams, and he's a pretty great defender too. So it's kind of insane that it's 11 guys. And even with Isaiah Joe and Carson Wallace's size, they still play great defense. You have so many guys. The point guard from the center on the bench and the second squad, all of them can be all defensive team players. So it's like, it's very scary to play OKC, especially at home. That defense is crazy.
Yeah, and I saw somebody else talk about it, but this team is really historically on a defensive level, as far as statistics and metrics. I mean, which is very interesting because, you know, in recent years, I would talk about, hey, you know, defense in the NBA is declining. People not really playing defense no more. Everything is about offense. I mean, obviously, you got to have a little bit of defense, but they say, okay, your main objective should be how many points you get on the board. But, I mean, they've been blowing people out on the defensive side, feels like, for a lot of this this playoff run.
What I've been seeing is lately the teams that played a better defense, especially this year, have been the teams that are going farther. A lot of the better teams. So I was telling somebody yesterday, I was like, man, it might do a little reverse. Defense might come back. I was telling somebody in the car yesterday as I was moving around, I was like, man, like, the Thunder, the Pacers, even the Timberwolves. I mean, who else over there? The Knicks, they play scrappy defense. Mm-hmm. But now I'm looking like defense is back. Yeah, and I love it.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things is that I think a lot of, you know, fans have voiced how they think guys in NBA are scoring a little bit too much now. I mean, you know, it was a time where you got guys scoring 50 every single night. You get role players come off the bench and they score 30, things like that. It was a very high scoring uptick before this season. I think this season, the NBA, the front office kind of sent out a message to the referees like, hey, we need to let them play a little bit more. And I think referees, because of that, have let guys play a little bit more tougher on defense. So, because of this series and OKC Thunder making it to the NBA Finals for the first time since 2012, obviously there's been a lot of comparisons to that 2012 Thunder team headed by three future MVPs and Kevin Durant, James Harden, and of course Russell Westbrook. Obviously, a lot of people are calling Chet Holmgren. Make comparisons to Kevin Durant when it comes to him. They've been making comparisons of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to Russell Westbrook, which I don't see as far as talent-wise, and Jalen Williams being James Harden. What do you think about comparisons to that 2012 Thunder team?
I feel like it's not too different, but I feel like this Thunder team is just structured better. I believe the supporting cast is better on this Thunder team. The comparisons are not horrible. Chet from KD. KD just a little more offensive. Chet a little more defensive. And KD might edge him a little more overall. Well, he definitely does edge him a little more overall. Shea and Westbrook, I believe Shea actually edges Westbrook. And that's surprising for me to say because I love Westbrook. I've been a Thunder fan since 2012, that season. So, yeah, it is just kind of crazy. James Harden, Jalen Williams, I believe early in his career, that's a great comparison. But, you know, James Harden went on to be one of the best scorers of all time on the Houston Rockets. So I just believe, like, the comparisons are not horrible. The comparisons are not bad. They are two very, very, very similar teams. But I just believe this OKC Thunder team is more structured and it has a little more defense. So I believe it will end up being a better team.
As far as, like, numbers are concerned, the 2012 Thunder team was 47-19. It was a 66 game lockout season. And obviously this year, the 2025 Thunder were 57-25 in the regular season. In the first game of the finals, actually, the OKC Thunder with KD and that big three, they actually beat the Heat in game one. Obviously, the series and go to well for them. I think the Heat beat the Thunder in six that year. So, but yeah, looking deeper, SGA and Russell Westbrook have no really no comparison. No. Obviously, both of them are guards and won the MVP. But as far as offensive, I mean, they're nothing the same. Yeah. I agree with you as far as Chet Holmgren and Kevin Durant. I feel like Chet Holmgren, you know, slim, he can shoot and things of that nature, but he's more defensive centric and he's more like a plays more like a big than Kevin Durant does. Jalen Williams and James Harden, I can see a little bit of that, but I think Jalen Williams right now being an all-star this year, I think he's a little bit better than James Harden was at that age in 2012. So it's you can see a little spark of it, but Russell Westbrook and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander are two completely different guards. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a big guard. Russell Westbrook is a smaller guard. Russell Westbrook played a little bit more above the rim. SGA, he's more smooth. He's going to get to the cup, but he's going to hit you with layups. He got step backs, mid-range, three-point shot. Russell Westbrook has never, you know, been that type of offensive player. And talking about play style, the 2012 Thunder team, if you watch them, it was very ISO-centric. Russell Westbrook took turns. KD took turns. James Harden, he came off the bench. He gave you some as far as ISO. But looking at the this team now, everybody touches the ball. It's very, you know, freelance. You drive to the cup, you pitch it out, things of that nature. So, yeah.
I just feel like there was a time where ISO ball was big. So, it's like, that made sense. It felt like ISO pretty big at that time.
All right, so Anthony Edwards. I haven't really seen a lot of this, but Anthony Edwards, to me, what I've noticed is that he's kind of become an elderly abuser. playing against, you know, older superstars in the playoffs, Anthony Edwards is basically undefeated. He's beating LeBron in the playoffs. He's beating Steph Curry in the playoffs. Last year, he beat Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. He's older than Edwards, obviously, so I don't really put him in that category. But obviously, you look at how he beat Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal. He's beaten who else did he beat last year?
He beat Denver last year, but I don't think that really counts.
But Jokic is much older than him, though.
Jokic came out in 29. Is he 30?
But it's a difference because Jokic came out in 2014, 2015, something like that. So I would kind of say that even though Jokic is in his prime, but he is a lot older. It's not his age range. And look, before that season, in the play-in tournament, the Timberwolves beat the Clippers. So I haven't seen a lot of people talk about it, but I have noticed a trend that Anthony Edwards has been pretty much wiping out all the older superstars.
The older team, they were just supposed to lose to the Timberwolves anyway. I don't think it was just, and they were just ended up playing them. I mean, LeBron, we beat LeBron this year. I ain't gonna lie, I was scared of LeBron them for the playoff start. I ain't never really tell everybody that as a Thunder fan. I was like, okay, it's LeBron and Luka. They can make a good one. They can do something. They ended up doing nothing at all.
Yeah.
The Warriors were bad, severely injured. The Warriors probably could have won that series, but I didn't have the Warriors winning that series. So I believe the Timberwolves just won what they were supposed to win. On the Nuggets, if you kind of want to say that was a great win by them by beating the older team. So, I was very shocked on that. Who else they beat?
I think you said Warriors, Lakers, Nuggets. I think that's about everybody they beat. But if you look at
KD.
Yeah, KD, the Suns. Yeah.
The Suns, yeah. They were supposed to beat that team.
But you look at the teams that he has been able to beat coming to the playoffs. He lost to the John Morant Grizzlies the year they won the play-in. He lost to, obviously, the Mavericks, headed by Luka last year in the Western Conference Finals. And then this year in the Western Conference Finals, he lost to this young Thunder team with SGA. So why do you think why do you think Anthony Edwards has, been successful against older superstars, but for some reason you run up against these young guys, he just ain't able to get it?
Because when you get to the younger teams, you have Mike Conley on your team. So when you get to the younger teams, the team that's too old. You have Rudy Gobert on your team when you get to the younger team. Carl the Towns, you had him on your team when you got to the younger team. So it's like, when you get to the younger teams, you get guys that's not really moving, running down the court, spraying, getting in transition, getting transition baskets. You don't have too many of those guys on your team. It's like half and half. So half your team is a set 5-on-5 team, and the other half your team is a transition team. So you can play against the older teams and outrun them, but when it's time to play against the younger teams, it's not that easy to outrun them. So it's like, you're just like in the middle right now. So I believe Conley should be cut from the team.
Yeah, and I think the Timberwolves got to get a little bit more younger. Obviously, they got a lot of young pieces. They got that young guy that started coming off the bench this series. I forget his name, but he was, was real good. He was a dog.
Young guy?
Yeah, remember that guy?
Rob?
With them dreads.
Rob? Terrence Shannon.
He was playing lights out when they gave him opportunity. It'd be nice to see him come back a little bit more next year. But another thing I noticed about Anthony Edwards' game this playoff run was that he's been trying to take a lot of threes, and he has been making them. And I know the 3-point shot is something in his game that he's been trying to evolve, because the first couple of years coming into the league when he was playing, it was a lot of mid range, which he was great at, getting to the mid range and pulling up, getting to the cup, things of that nature. He was dunking a lot more than he does now, which probably is smarter. Health-wise, but his game has changed and it's kind of declined. It hasn't been very playoff-friendly. So that's one thing I would like to see Anthony Edwards get more to. Get back to that mid-range game. You had that mid-range game coming to the league. That's something different that a lot of guys don't have anymore coming to the league, that mid-range game. And yes, I want you to be able to expand your game, get to that 3-point shot and evolve that. But when that's not falling, you're going to have to go back to what you used to do. So that's one thing that I want to see from Anthony Edwards going forward in the future. All right, so talking about MVP. As we mentioned earlier, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA, is the 2024-2025 regular season MVP. He had averaged 37.7 points a game, which led the entire NBA this season, 5 rebounds, 6 assists per game, 1.7 steals per game. I didn't know that. And 51.9% shooting from the field. And of course, OKC Thunder had the best record in the league, winning the Western Conference by 16 games. He had 71 first place votes, which surpassed Nikola Jokic. I think Nikola Jokic had around 30-something first place votes. So, and looking at Nikola Jokic's numbers, he averaged 29.6 points per game, around 13 rebounds per game, and around 10 assists per game. Obviously, a triple-double, 57.6% from the field as well. So what do you think about this MVP matchup or race or run that happened this year with SGA winning the MVP?
It was probably one of the best MVP races of all time. Jokic, I mean, he was supposed to win. I mean, it's voter fatigue, and you got to think about it. SGA deserved it last year. Mm-hmm. And SGA just had the better team by a lot. So it was just like it was going to look very bad on the NBA if Jokic would have won. I guess I believe SGA, he might have been a little more valuable up until some of those stretches, especially in the playoffs, even though playoffs aren't included, as they say. Playoffs were definitely included because I definitely think they just gave it to the person who won the series. But, I just believe that SGA, it just made sense for him to win this time. Even though I believe Jokic was the clear MVP, because like those stats are insane. Those are Wilt Chamberlain stats. Wilt Chamberlain would have won MVP every year he played if he played right now. So I just believe SGA this is just the right year to play because, you know, the voter fatigue, that's all it was. It really wasn't in 2 years.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of that. We talked about in the last episode where we kind of figured that SGA was going to win. It's voter fatigue. I think overall, Nikola Jokic had a better statistical season, and he was much more valuable to the Denver Nuggets, in my opinion, than SGA was to OKC Thunder. But, I mean, give props to SGA. I mean, you know, he's taking this MVP and going along with it, an amazing playoff run, taking his team to the NBA Finals the first time since 2012. So, gotta commend SGA for that, even though it is a regular season award. Mm-hmm. Along with the NBA MVP being announced recently, we also got our All-NBA teams. The All-NBA first team was headlined by the MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The runner-up MVP, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, and Donovan Mitchell. Going straight to the second team, got Jalen Brunson making the second team, Stephen Curry making the second team, Anthony Edwards, LeBron James, and Evan Mobley. And going into that third All-NBA team, you got Cade Cunningham, Tyrese Halliburton, James Harden, Carl Anthony Towns, and Jalen Williams, the starting Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Well, what's your reaction to these All-NBA teams?
Okay, so that first team, great. Y'all did y'all thing with it. The second team, Steph Curry, no. Cade Cunningham, Tyrese Halliburton, one of them should have been over him on that second team. I mean, didn't really watch too much of the second half of the season, but I know that first half of the season, Curry had some struggles up in there. Mm-hmm. So I believe Cade Cunningham should have definitely been in the second team. Cade Cunningham had a conversation for the first team, but Donovan Mitchell didn't step his game up at a certain time. So, I mean, the list aren't too bad. Who was all on that second team, man?
The second team was Jalen Brunson, Stephen Curry, Anthony Edwards, LeBron James, and Evan Mobley.
Evan Mobley, defense player of the year, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think it would. So I'm not gonna complain about that because you know both sides of the ball type. It's cool. The third team with J Dub All NBA. I don't know who else you would put up there. So
yeah, I think J Dub is gonna be third all NBA.
Guys
yeah.
Like Siakam or somebody, but I think he outplayed him too. So he really deserved because the defense side of the ball he plays too. A lot of these guys, a lot of people don't look at the defense side of the ball when it comes to these All NBA teams, but some of these guys are picked just because they play both sides of the ball very well.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie, second team, my problem is with Stephen Curry and LeBron James. Them making the squeeze into the same team was very interesting. And I like both of those guys, especially for me, LeBron James. Second team, I would have moved Tyrese Halliburton and Cade Cunningham into that second team. I feel like they had, you know, better seasons overall and as far as being valuable to their teams. I mean, I'm not really sure what the criteria is for all NBA. Obviously, you got to play very, very well and be valuable to your team. I'm not sure, like, how the voters kind of vote for all NBA, but that would probably be my alteration. Stephen Curry and LeBron James moving down to that third team, and Cade Cunningham and Tyrese Halliburton making that second team. But also, a lot of people talking about James Harden, Los Angeles Clippers. A lot of people think he shouldn't have made all NBA team at all.
What he was on 13, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's on 13.
But who's all on that 13, man? Who's all on that?
Kay Cunningham, Tyrese Halliburton, James Harden, Karl Anthony Towns, and Jalen Williams. Also, Jalen Williams.
Who would you put over Harden though? Did Ant make one?
No, Ant-Man didn't make one. No, Ant-Man was the second team.
I'm completely tripping there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't
have a name on the top of my head.
Yeah. I mean, do you think a Rockets player should have made it? Maybe Sengun?
No. I immediately thought about Thompson and Green. So I mean, Sengun had flew past. Sengun probably bad. That probably should have made it.
Kind of James
did Harden. He play 65 games though? Because the Rockets had a lot of injuries back then.
Yeah, I mean, he had to play 65 games to be to make it. But I mean, Norman Powell, he was kind of carrying the Clippers for a long stretch there. That's probably not my bone to pick, but that
second half of the season, that's like the same thing I'm saying with Steph Curry, how he made the second team. That second half of the season, James Harden, he bought out. I believe it just was the relevancy. Like it was closer. The second half, it was closer. So it's like, yeah, he was just balling out these last 40, 50 games. So we're gonna mess with him. So I believe it's something like that.
So recently, there's been a lot of talk with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kevin Durant possibly being moved this offseason. Obviously, Kevin Durant being moved is kind of seemed like a sort of a guarantee from the Suns organization. They can't move Bradley Beal because of no trade clause. Obviously, they're not going to get rid of Devin Booker. So Kevin Durant kind of seems like the odd man out, and they were shopping him during the season as far as, getting a move. But I think Kevin Durant kind of pushed back. He wanted to end the season with the Suns, but now it's kind of been guaranteed that he's probably going to be on a new home this next season. And then when Giannis Antetokounmpo, he is informing the Bucks that, he is thinking about his future, and he's not sure that it's going to be in Milwaukee. He is opening himself up to possibly playing with other teams. And for both Giannis and KD, as far as trade destinations, there's been a few teams to come up. And that includes the Dallas Mavericks, the Houston Rockets, the OKC Thunder, the San Antonio Spurs, Indiana Pacers, New York Knicks, the LA Clippers, and the Miami Heat. What do you think about? Well, let's first talk about Giannis. What do you think would be a good trade destination for Giannis Antetokounmpo?
I haven't really ever thought about that because Giannis Antetokounmpo, and it's going to cost a lot to trade him.
Also, the Golden State Warriors were probably not. Now they got Jimmy Butler, so yeah, it's probably not gonna be the Golden State Warriors. What you think?
I would trade Jimmy Butler, but that's a different story. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
With Giannis, he's what? Still not 30, is he?
No, he ain't 30.
You know what I'm saying? So he's like sort of young player, still got at least probably 10 years in him if you can squeeze it out of him.
Giannis in his prime still.
Yeah, he's a great player. So it's like he could change the team around. So you would probably give up anything for him. But who even really has that much to give in a position to win a championship? I mean, the Rockets, hey, I like that destination. But I think they need more shooting instead of more of a Giannis-esque. They need more shooting on that team. They don't need a person to get to the paint. They already got enough guys. They can get to the paint. Thompson, Sengun, they good down there. The Spurs, I think they need a little more shooting, too. I believe the Spurs don't really shoot the ball as well as they should. I mean, even if you do compare Giannis with Wembanyama with De'Aaron Fox, that'd be a crazy squad. But at the same time, I believe you just still can't shoot the three ball good enough to win a finals team. You might be a great conference final team, but I don't think you're going to shoot yourself to a championship because you got a lot of guys that's mainly in the post. I don't really see too many great fits for Giannis or KD. We're not talking about KD right now, but I don't see too many great fits for any of them. But I believe if the Rockets have the assets and they can get some shooters out of the deal, kind of like restructure both teams, I'd do it.
Yeah.
But not right now.
I think the Milwaukee Bucks is the best place for Giannis because they're already built around Giannis. You know what I'm saying? The team's already centered around Giannis. But, I mean, if he had to be moved, I'll probably say the Spurs might be the best fit because you got De'Aaron Fox and you got Wembanyama. Both of them can shoot. And then Giannis can kind of be in the middle of all that. De'Aaron Fox kind of orchestrating it. Obviously, I don't know if Chris Paul is going to stay. I haven't really heard anything about him retiring or anything, but I'm not sure if he's going to stay. He only had a one-year deal last year with the Spurs. So that probably makes the most basketball sense and probably the most trade sense, too. I mean, the Spurs got a lot to give up as far as young pieces. Obviously, I'll keep Stephon Castle, but you can get Keldon Johnson if you want Keldon Johnson. I'll give away Keldon Johnson for Giannis Antetokounmpo. My own untouchables with the Spurs: De'Aaron Fox, Wembanyama, Stephen Castle. You can have anybody else for me. That'll be me.
Anybody else? It's another guy that I know I'm not thinking about right now. Instead of Castle, it's another guy that I kind of like put on that level. I can't think of it. It might be Johnson. It might be Keldon Johnson.
I mean, I like Keldon Johnson. I think he's a good contributor. He's a good young player, but I don't.
It might be somebody better. I'm thinking about somebody that kind of is like Castle-ish, but like one of them is a little older. He's a little older than Castle.
Let's see.
I might be overthinking it right now. It's somebody. It was two of those guys that I was like, okay, this is their core. It was a four-man core on the Spurs. But the Spurs, I don't believe the Spurs should mess up what they got going on right now.
Could you possibly be talking about Sochan?
No, I'm not talking about Sochan. I mean, I was tripping.
Devin Vassell?
Vassell, that's what it is. Yeah.
I'll give you Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson and maybe an unprotected first, a first swap, and a unprotected second.
You're gonna suck.
What you mean? Bro, you got I don't want to go too deep on the Spurs, but you got Wimby, you got Stephen Castle, you got De'Aaron Fox with Giannis. I think it makes the most basketball sense and the most trade sense.
Well, we have Vassell there too. That's your five.
They gonna want, I think,
Fox, Vassell, Castle, Giannis, Wimby.
They gonna want two players, bro. And if you don't give them Stephen Castle, they gonna want two players.
Give them two players. Give them Sochan and
you can give them Sochan. It's a couple players. I like Sochan.
There are a couple people on the bench that's young. Don't tweet me out. Uh-huh. Don't Trey Johnson play for them? I think that's his name. Trey Johnson, Trey Jackson. One of them trades.
No, I don't think so.
I might be tripping. Yeah, that might be a different team.
Yeah.
I thought it was the one from the Thunder, the trade from the Thunder. Mm. I thought he had one over there, but I guess he didn't. Now I'm thinking about it. If they don't want to give up five picks, they really don't have a lot.
What about the Heat? What you think about the Giannis to the Heat? They got a good organization, good culture. Him and Pat Riley might get along.
Because Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero lost me so much money, I hate the Heat. So to see them get Giannis, I might be a little mad. But what would you give up? Duncan Robinson? Then you messing up your chemistry. Tyler Hero, you don't want to give up. You can't give up your best player on the team. Bam Adebayo. There's nobody in that midway section in the world like, okay, he's a good player, but we'll give him up. You don't really have nobody like that on the Heat.
Talking about Kevin Durant now, KD, I think he can make a lot of fits in a lot of places. I think a lot of it is just the goals of the organization and what they want to give up. Yeah, asking price. Yeah, Kevin Durant, I think he fits on the Mavericks. I think he fits on the Rockets. I think he fits on the Thunder, but he said he doesn't want to go back to the Thunder. Or
why?
The
I was just going to say that. Come
he
back
said,
home.
He said he don't want to go back to the Thunder or Golden State. So Spurs, I think he'll be a great fit for the Spurs. But the Spurs have to win now, you know. If they get Kevin Durant versus Giannis, Pacers, Knicks, Clippers, Heat. I mean, I think all of those would be good fits for Kevin Durant. It's just all the bags of price.
Everybody can take a guy that can score at will. Ian plays off ball, can play on ball. Everybody would take. Who wouldn't want Kevin Durant on their team? Who couldn't make up plays, make schemes for Kevin Durant? Because he literally can do everything on the offensive side of the ball. So it's like nobody that don't want KD, but it's like you don't want to give up two first-round picks and a player that can play for KD. You don't want to give up three, four first-round picks and a bench player for KD. You don't want to do that. So it's like, where is he about to go? Like, because the Suns are going to ask for at least probably two first-rounders and a decent player. I wouldn't get that up for KD.
Yeah.
Not at 37 years old?
I wouldn't
do that.
All right, so Travis Hunter, obviously Travis Hunter is making a lot of news recently, but we're going to try to keep it on the field. Travis Hunter There's been a lot of videos going around lately from Travis Hunter from Jaguars minicamp, and there's been a couple of our videos of him, you know, running some sloppy routes, tripping up and stuff like that. But I also seen a lot of clips that has gone viral of him, you know, being an absolute beast in rookie minicamp or off-season workouts, whatever you want to call it. OTAs haven't started yet, but off-season workouts. So what do you think about these viral clips for Travis Hunter?
What I have been saying is what I've always knew about Travis Hunter. He's better on the defensive side of the ball. I've known that since high school, from knowing him from being, like, I think one state over. I forgot which state.
Georgia.
Was Georgia.
Graham Christian played.
Yeah. So I knew him from high school. Yeah, playing Graham Christian, being one state over. So he was always better on the defensive side of the ball. He's always been a ball hog. The reason he's always played both sides of the ball because he's going to jump over your head and catch the ball. He's not really always just been a more fancy footwork guy. You know, offensive guys always are better than defense guys at the feet. Most of the time, that's how offense has been getting better than defense. But Travis Hunter probably just better at backpedaling than he is at going forward. That doesn't mean he still can't be the same great player on both sides of the ball and do the same thing he did at Colorado. He will not do the same thing he did at Colorado. He will not be the best offensive and defensive player in this conference. No, not at all. But I believe he will be decent offensively. He will give you, he can give you 2 to 3 catches a game for at least 50 to 60 yards. But defense side of the ball is what he needs to focus on for right now. And just keep continuing to be a better defender. He should probably try to be more passer tennis than, you know, George Pickens. You know, try to be more of the best defender than just a solid offensive player. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think it's very suggestive that I don't think they played Travis Hunter in practice on defense yet. They keep putting him on offensive reps, and I think it's because they're trying to teach him, like, wide receiver, NFL, you know, route runner. You know, I used to tell my dad this when we watched Colorado football. I was like, Travis Hunter doesn't run routes. And he was like, you know, what you mean? I was like, when I watch Travis Hunter, you can kind of tell Colorado, he's not really running a lot of routes. It's just he's trying to find, you know, the open spot on the field. And Shedeur Sanders is going to get him open. He's going to jump over guys. He's going to put him in, you know, tight situations between two people and, you know, on the sidelines, and he's going to catch it. He's got huge hands. He got a very nice build. He's around like 6'1". He's around like 185, 190, but I think he's getting, you know, a little bit more muscle now. He's pretty fast. He didn't run the 40 at the combine. He didn't participate in the combine at all, but I can tell that he's, you know, pretty fast. So he's got all the measures to be a corner or a wide receiver. But I think right now, you know, they're trying to teach him that NFL, you know, elite route running. My only thing is that I hope that they keep continuing trying to work with him at wide receiver, because it's very easy to put him on defensive side and just leave it alone. You know, like, after that point, he's not going to have any power. he's not going to have any power if the Jaguars just say, hey, we put you on defense and that's it. But I think they're very adamant about playing him on both sides, because you have to.
Yeah.
You have to at this point.
Yeah, because the Jaguars need both of those positions. So it's like, like, what are you doing?
Yeah. All right. So there's recently been some news coming out of the College Football Playoff Committee that the 12-team, the new 12-team college football playoff model is going to change a little bit this season. Obviously, last year was the first year they went to the 12-team playoff. But it's supposed to change a little bit this upcoming season. They will move to a straight seeding model this fall, rewarding the selection committee's top four teams with the top four seeds in a first-round bye, which is obviously different than, okay, your top four league. Well, not league, but top four conference champions getting those, you know, top four seeds in the playoffs and getting those byes. Instead of it being the top four champions, it would be the top four teams that the committee chooses. Okay. They'll get those byes. And there's been 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director who have comprised the college football's management committee, and they reached this unanimous agreement necessary to make a change during a call this past Thursday. So, what do you think about these changes to the college football playoffs?
See, me, I've always hated the committee. Even since it was just only 14 going to the playoff, I've always hated the committee. I've never thought it should be a committee or anything. what college football is, and which this is why I hate, well, not hate football, but I hate that how aggressive football is. You can't play a lot of games in the playoffs, or you'll have a lot of injuries and a lot of people can't make it to the end. But with college football, there's so many teams and it's so widespread, I believe they should, like, make a bigger playoff than rather than, like, I believe it should be, like, 16 teams. Or, yeah, you know,
there's been talks of that.
It should just be more teams in the playoffs than it is now. I believe it should have two sides. It should have the South region of America and the North region of America.
Oh, you're trying to make it to college basketball now.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. It should be the South region of America and the North region of America. You can keep the committee, but the committee, they bring together the best 18 from each side, you know, whatever they pick or whatever. Then you just play down to the middle. I believe that's how it should be, man. I believe it should be expanded rather than revised. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, I mean, there's been talks about the, you know, expanded 16. So we'll get to that in a minute. I kind of like this new, you know, seeding format, because taking the four top four conference champions is definitely flawed, because you had what was it?
Oregon. Boise.
Well, Boise State, yeah, for Boise. One. They, you know, play in a weaker conference, Mountain West. And, you know, any G5, you know, football team, if they win their conference championship and they just happen to be a higher seeded, you know, higher seeded team than a Power 5 school, and they play in the, you know, get a bye and they run up against Penn State.
You'll get smoked.
like Boise State did last year, it's going to be tough. And it's going to be like, okay, what's the point of them getting that first round bye if they, you know, have no chance of winning? And you look at a team like the Big 12 champion, the Arizona State, the Sun Devils, they probably could have used their first round bye. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a good change. Like, just take whatever the committee thinks is the top four teams, like they used to do, whatever the committee thinks is the top four teams, just go ahead and give them, you know, their first round bye. But, I mean, if you win the conference championship now, still top five, you still get to the playoffs, but you don't get that first round bye, which I enjoy. But another thing I think they should look at is, you know, last year when they had, you know, the first round, and they had, you know, home teams, you know, play their first round playoff game at home. You had teams like Indiana who, you know, had a good, you know, regular season, but they got to that first round, they got blew out the water. Same thing with who else? It was Indiana had a real bad game. Austin Boyd State had a real bad game when they had that conference bye. SMU. They had a very great you know, regular season, but they got to that first round playoffs and it just wasn't good. So I think I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to decide to do it, but they're going to have to work on trying to get in that first round a little bit more competitive, because I think in the first round, all the teams that were favored to win won in the first round. And also getting back to that 16-team playoff thing that you mentioned, they've been talking about that as well. It's probably not going to happen for, you know, a few more years, but I think they need to master the 12 team before they get to 16 teams.
Yeah, I mean, the 12 team, it's not bad. It's just like, bro, y'all, it's the conference winning thing. I believe that shouldn't matter either. I ain't going to lie to you. Because it's like, you win the conference, but your conference is the swag. Like, you ain't did nothing. Like, you ain't beat nobody. Like, you done played 12, 13 teams that don't deserve to be nowhere near the playoffs. You done went 13-0, 12-1. You did whatever you did. You probably beat one or two schools like Oregon or Ohio State or something like that. You probably slipped up and beat them one time on a fluke game or somebody, they quarterback or something being hurt. You made it all the way to the playoffs. You get to the playoffs and you're horrible. So it's like, I don't care if you win your conference championship. You still suck. You still should go through this committee, and we should still have to decide if you're in the playoffs. You're not that good. Boise State, they should have never made it close to the playoffs. You can't throw the ball at all. I hated that playoff last year, the people that made it. People wanted to bet me that Boise State was going to win the whole thing. I was like, bro, are you stupid? Look at their schedule. So, like, it's like, yeah, I just believe the committee should pick the whole 12. So, that's my...
I mean, they technically do pick the whole 12, but you got to make conference winning, like, relevant a little bit. You can't just because
you can't just really completely get rid of it. That's why it's not competitive.
Well, I mean, another problem with college football is that there's never going to be 12 teams that legitimately has a chance of winning. You know, the championship. That's going to be another problem.
If you put Bama in there for Boise State, you have a way better game. If you put it's somebody else that who put Miami in there for that other team or whatever, you have a way better game.
Alabama got snubbed. Miami got snubbed. Ole Miss.
You have a way better game if those teams play instead of Boise State and SMU. You have a way better playoffs if those teams play. Those teams probably win the game if they play. So it's like,
okay. You're going to have to find a balance between who deserves it because you got to make the regular season count. You got to make your playing your conference games count. Yes, you do.
Play-in. NCAA play-in. Gonna bring the play in. You win those weak conference, you gotta still play in. We're gonna do it like that. We're gonna seed everybody. We need to have 16. I'm telling you, we need to have 16 teams. But the first four are the play in. We need to have a play in selection. Well, okay. So we can put those people that win those conferences, they can still be in there. But the people that you feel like, okay, he just won the conference, the committee can say, okay, we're gonna put them in this play in tournament. They're gonna play into the tournament. They're gonna get in there.
Yeah, but I'm saying, okay, let's say one of those teams play in. And then in the actual playoff, you have, you know, let's say you have a Cinderella. Let's say Boise State win two play-in games and they get to the first round. And then they play Georgia and they get smoked. Like, it would still be no they point in this anyway. Extra games for no reason.
Well, they would have played Georgia this year. They would have got smoked. At least they would have been a little more ready. They would have been two more games prepared. Yeah. They would have got smoked, man. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like I was just like, the biggest problem that college football is going to have with the playoffs is that you have 134 FBS teams. You have 134 FBS teams. They added a few more. It's probably like 138 now. You got 130-something FBS teams. But you try to make a playoff and you say there's 16 teams. There's not 12 teams. There's not 16 teams that have a legitimate chance of winning the championship. So that's going to be the biggest problem.
It's 16 teams that can make it competitive. That's what I'm saying. It's still going to be one or two blowouts.
So you're saying there's 16 teams that can be competitive. But
yeah,
it
can look better than it looked this year. This year, it didn't get serious until the Final Four. Like, it didn't get serious until the Final Four.
Yeah. I mean, in the in the second round when you had Arizona State and Texas play, that was a dang good game.
That was a great game. Yeah. I watched that game. And I was going for Texas the whole time. I was so scared during that game. Scatterboo is a dog.
I found out about him very early. It's Mississippi State. Scatterboo, he came out of nowhere.
Scatterboo, dog.
All right, so everybody, that was another fun episode of the Fan Take. I'm Cam, and that's why I don't watch this camera. I'm Cam, and I'm with Tweety, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, see, I'm in the thunder. I be feeling like I'm chick. Switch up like KD, Draymond, don't give me a tick. Double team, bitch, send your